The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I have to confess, I find Joe Biden's unpopularity puzzling.
What's really puzzling is how this illegitimate president supposedly got 81 million votes living in the basement all during the campaign season. That's really what he should be asking. That's what he should be asking after all of these disastrous policies. We've had about a year of it now, of this illegitimate presidency. And yet there he is, as any good committed leftist will do. He just plays along with the big lie. He supposedly got in with 81 million, the most in history. And now they're left to this. Well, I guess the poll numbers aren't so good, and I can't understand why. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of the show through our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on their platform. But if you want to see the live video stream and our beautiful set all around us here, you have to go to our very own website, thetrumpet.com. And don't forget, go to thetrumpet.com/live so you can get to the podcast right after the live stream event is over. We try to dress it up a few hours after the fact with a title and a summary and so on. But if you're eager to watch it, you just barely missed the live stream, you can get to that at thetrumpet.com/live. So much to get to on today's program. This clip, that's Fareed, Zakaria is how you pronounce his last name. I had to look that up. But he's over at CNN, and there he is. He's puzzled. He's puzzled by Biden's unpopularity. Now, this same commentator in the lead up, we've been all over this in recent months and even last year, right after the November 3 election steal. We told you how that the radical left, the communists in the news media, how that they were preparing America for the steal, basically saying that now on election night, it's going to look like Donald Trump is ahead. But then, this will be an unusual election. It'll take a few days, and then the blue wave will come and pass Trump just at the very last possible moment. So election day was November 3rd, right? And then it was the 7th, I believe it was, 4 days later, that the media, they anointed Joe Biden at the very last second, just as they had predicted. Here's Fareed Zakaria. I think this was in September of 2020, clip 9.
All of us need to start preparing for a deeply worrying scenario on November 3rd. It's not some outlandish fantasy, but rather the most likely course of events based on what we know today. On election night, Donald Trump will be ahead significantly in a majority of states, including the swing states that will decide the election. Then over the next few days, mail-in ballots will be counted and the numbers could shift in Joe Biden's favor. But will Trump accept that outcome? Will America?
Wow, that's some pretty astute commentary. He laid it. That's exactly what happened. He was in on the steal, or if he wasn't, he was used as a dupe. Obama's people, they put it out there. Look, for the first time ever, we've got 100 million mail-in ballots out. I mean, we can cheat all across the board. And they did. And they did. And then they had their people, their allies in the media, tell everybody in advance, this is how it's going to happen. Trump's going to be way ahead. They knew, you see. They knew that the Democrats would vote mail-in and Trump's people would show up on the day of. They just knew this. How did they know? I mean, that's a perfect analysis. Supposing it wasn't stolen, he knew exactly how it was going to happen, not just on election day, but in the days that followed. And now we fast forward a year, a little more than a year, and there he is. All of these disastrous policies. And he's left there trying to explain to the American people, I just don't understand why he's so unpopular. He's wonderful. We told you he was wonderful from the beginning. Imagine being that kind of a newsman where you're so agenda-driven, you've got to try to... Do you think he would say that same thing about Donald Trump? During the Trump presidency, would Fareed get up there and say, I can't understand why Donald Trump is so unpopular? Well, that's all that they said for 4 years, and it wasn't even true. So there they are trying to tell you that a popular president is unpopular, and then there's no denying the unpopularity of this train wreck we've seen over the last year, and they scratch their head. They can't understand it. How could this be? Well, look at the past. How about if you open your eyes and look at the past year? Here's a president who came in. He promised, I'm not going to kill the economy. I'm going to kill COVID. And if you heard at the top of the hour, oh, it's nonstop. I usually turn it down because it's like a broken record. Now we've got all of these events canceled. 2 years in, what started as 15 days to slow the spread. And we're nearly to the 2 year anniversary. All of these sports events, these entertainment venues, these world summits, whatever it is, they're being pushed back into the summer of 2022. I'm going to kill COVID, not the economy. And then he comes in and he proceeds to kill the economy. And COVID is raging. Why is he? I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled why he's so unpopular. The New York Times, by the way, just this morning, most of the world's vaccines likely won't prevent infection from Omicron. So they don't work. They don't work. But you still got to get jabbed. One, two, now the booster. Get boosted. This was from the New York Times on Sunday. As COVID surges, experts say U.S. booster effort is far behind. I mean, they're very concerned. Fauci's all over the news again all weekend. I probably won't have time to play the clips. You probably don't want to hear them. But there he is again. Stay away. It's the super spreader is coming because of the winter holidays that everyone keeps. Mask up. Get your booster shot. Here's the New York Times over the weekend as well. This is a bit of truth. They're talking about the hospitals being full of COVID patients. Instead, the hospitals, they don't have enough nurses. They don't have enough staff. How could this be? The New York Times says hospitalizations across the country have increased 20% in 2 weeks, taxing already exhausted healthcare workers. That's the New York Times. That's a bit of fake news. And then here's the truth. This is from I forget, the New York Times. It says the latest COVID spike isn't swamping New York City hospitals like before. Another 22,000 tests. So all these positive tests. But the article says here soaring COVID-19 case numbers, long testing lines, and event cancellations might feel a bit like deja vu. But so far, New York City hospitals aren't seeing a repeat of the surges that swamped emergency rooms early in the pandemic. So it's because Omicron is like a mild flu of all things to shut everything down. It says the state reported, well, let me switch over to this. This is from the AP. The problem is not too many patients. It's not enough nurses. The AP says, at Advent Health Shawnee Mission, a hospital near Kansas City, Missouri, chief medical officer Dr. Lisa Hayes said the emergency department is experiencing backups, sometimes lasting for days. The beds are not the issue. It's the nurses to staff the beds. See, they've got all these vaccine mandates, and people in hospitals don't want to take the vaccine. And so they don't have enough staff. This is the Biden administration going on 11 months now. 11 months of this. And you've got a CNN commentator saying, I can't understand why he's so unpopular. I mean, we've got vaccine mandates 2 years on. We've got people quitting their jobs from the medical industry. What else do we have? Oh, another variant. Omicron is spreading across record infections in New York City, not Florida. Florida's fine. They've removed all the mandates. But anyway, New York City, there's infections all over the place. We're running out of beds. Fake news. Plenty of beds, not enough nurses. This is from MSNBC over the weekend, clip 13.
So I think what we're learning is that the reality of this new variant is that we are going to see an exponential rise in cases here in the U.S. and that within a matter of weeks, Omicron is going to become the predominant variant. We are going to, because of that, just by sheer absolute number, we're going to see a significant rise in hospitalizations. Again, not necessarily because it's more severe, but just because there are more people who are infected. We have a crisis in terms of staffing shortages in hospitals around the country.
Well, there at the last, she said the silent part out loud. A crisis? Staffing shortages. You read between the lines, she's saying this is not really that serious, this variant. But we have a crisis. We don't have enough nurses. Why are nurses quitting? Well, you know why. It's because of these unpopular policies of Joe Biden. Here he's unleashing OSHA. You've got the, I think it was the Sixth Circuit. We'll get to that a little bit later. They reversed that decision at the lower level. So now it's off to the Supreme Court. The Sixth Circuit saying in a split decision that Biden can go ahead with his unpopular vaccine mandates and more people, more Americans can lose their jobs. I'm just puzzled, says Fareed. I'm puzzled why this man's so unpopular. Listen to this from, you'll remember Biden himself was out front saying this about a week or a week and a half ago. This was at a, I think it was a virtual meeting with one of Biden's reps and then Rochelle Walensky. You had Fauci on the other side. And listen to the way he sets up this virtual conference or this virtual presentation. This is clip 8.
The Omicron variant is more transmissible, and our medical experts anticipate it will lead to a rise in cases. Our vaccines work against Omicron, especially for people who get booster shots when they are eligible. If you are vaccinated, you could test positive. But if you do get COVID, your case will likely be asymptomatic or mild. For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death. For yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm.
So this is amazing. They just keep repeating this lie. It's based on no science whatsoever. If you're unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of serious illness and death. And yet all these statistics that just keep, you keep hearing about these prominent officials getting the COVID. They were jabbed 2 and 3 times. But there's the Biden administration singling out the unvaccinated, purposefully trying to divide the country. Blaming everything, blaming this disastrous year on the unvaccinated. This is over at redstate.com. It says, so why is the White House pushing this hysterical, dangerous rhetoric that seeks to pit Americans against each other for no scientific reason whatsoever? The answer is because it's all they got. Biden and his cohorts are calculating that because a majority of people are vaccinated, that they can somehow make the unvaccinated a foil going into 2022. That's the plan, as simple and as dumb as it is. They need someone to blame for their massive failures, and the unvaccinated will have to do. It goes on and says how that this is far worse than any of Donald Trump's tweets. They used to just rage over the tweets. And listen, you just heard that White House official. If you've been vaccinated, you may spread the disease, okay, but it probably won't be as serious. But if you're unvaccinated, it's a winter of serious illness and death. Imagine if Donald Trump were to tweet something like that during his presidency. It's all they have. It says Biden is using the office of president to push people into being openly hostile to one another. He came in promising unity, promising to bring people together. And now you get this. Biden said it himself 8-10 days ago. And then here comes the White House rep. They got to get it on film. It's posted at the website for the White House. The transcript. Oh, yes. If you're unvaccinated, you're the problem. You are the problem. This is from the Washington Post. Over the over the weekend. Three retired generals. The military must prepare now for a 2024 insurrection. It's all they got. The Trump people, look, disaster, disaster, disaster. And why? Well, it's Trump. It's Trump. The Trump people, they're the problem. The unvaccinated, the Trump supporters, the insurrectionists. Revolver.com, by the way, has got another big reveal on all of these agents, these ones that were inciting the violence, who were encouraging the crowd to go into the Capitol, like Ray Epps. All of these feds, and none of them arrested. None of them wanted by the FBI. It's because they are the FBI. The FBI framed those protesters just like it worked to frame Donald Trump. Incited and framed the protesters. We'll have more on that in the coming weeks. We're coming up to the year anniversary of that fake insurrection. We'll look more into that. And again, the reason why they make such a compelling argument over at Revolver.com and Tucker Carlson's Patriot Purge is because they show you the video. You can see the video. Now, you go to Joe Scarborough, he's got his video too. It's all carefully selected. I saw it one morning, the latest, greatest footage. It was like a garage door opener, up and down. They kept showing it. It was like on a continuous loop. The garage comes up, a chair is tipped over. People walk in, start taking pictures, and over and over and over. What about all the flashbangs? What about the weapons they hurled into those crowds to incite them? What about the guys on bullhorns? What about Ray Epps? Let's go into the Capitol. What about the ones smashing windows and then the Trump supporters pulling them back, saying that's not who we are? You're not going to get the truth. We're going to be talking more about the biggest stories of the year, or the biggest fake stories as well, as we come up to the end of this calendar year. Here's the Washington Post. Three retired generals. The military must prepare now for the 2024 insurrection. See, it's all they have. Trump supporters are terrorists. They're domestic terrorists. It's the greatest threat facing the United States. So this is what they focus on instead of what they're actually doing to hurt and to damage the United States of America. The Washington Post, again, this is put together by three generals. As we approach the first anniversary of the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, and keep in mind, who died? Who died in that deadly insurrection? Two Trump supporters. One of them stomped to death. The other one, Ashley Babbitt, shot in the neck by Capitol Hill police. A police officer shooting an unarmed woman. And the woman, I guess, is the problem. In this scenario, the woman is the problem. It says here, all of us former senior military officials, all of us, these three are speaking for the entire military complex. It says, are increasingly concerned about the aftermath of the 2024 presidential election and the potential for lethal chaos inside our military, which would put all Americans at severe risk. You think the Patriot Purge is real? It is real. These men here are saying, we've got to prepare not only for the insurrection, we've got to clean up the military. We've got to make sure that there's no Trump supporters there. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying between the lines here. It says here, in short, we are chilled to our bones at the thought of a coup succeeding next time. I mean, they're chilled to their bones. There's bones that are chilling and they're theirs, these generals. Chilled to the bone, they say. Who comes up with this stuff? It says here, one of our military's strengths is that it draws from our diverse population. It's a collection of individuals, all with different beliefs and backgrounds, but without constant maintenance, the potential for a military breakdown, mirroring societal or political breakdown, is very real. So what do we need? We need some maintenance in the military. There was a story at frontpagemag.com. A couple of you sent it to me. How that Obama's stabbing the military in the back. or I guess it talked about it in terms of his presidency, but he continues to do it because he's running the show right now. This is Obama's third term. Why is Joe Biden so deeply unpopular? Well, look at what he's doing to the economy. He said, I'm going to kill COVID, but not the economy. And as I say, COVID rages on, and he's killing the economy. America's going bankrupt. Inflation is out of control. Jobs are being killed because of this administration. Supply chain, it's backlogged. The skyrocketing inflation, if you think of how or who that hurts the most, it's poor people. Poorer people that can't afford what's going up and up and up at supermarkets. So it's like an oppressive tax on the poor. The rich people, the ones making $2 million a year, like Stephanie Ruhle, I mean, she's fine paying more for lettuce. But it's the poorer people that can't afford all of these astronomical prices at the supermarket and elsewhere. Biden comes in, and what does he do? Donald Trump brought energy independence to the United States of America. Biden gets in there, and within weeks, that's gone. He nukes the Keystone XL pipeline project, even as he backs and supports Nord Stream 2 to help Russia. He hurts American workers. The Nord Stream, the Keystone pipeline, that killed roughly 30,000 jobs. And you've got Fareed Zakaria saying, I just can't understand why he's unpopular. That's what we're left with in terms of commentary on the communist networks. The southern border, what about that, Fareed? Biden triggering this invasion on America's southern border. It's going to be up to 2 million illegal immigrants just this year alone. It raged all summer long. The summer, remember, we've been told that the summer are the hot months, so, you know, immigration, illegal immigration at the southern border, it pretty much drops way, way off. Not this year. It's just been a steady stream of about 200,000 per month. And no end in sight. Nothing being done. Kamala supposedly put over it. She was given the responsibility to fix this problem. And you've got leaders in Central America saying, I haven't talked to her in 6 months. This is a train wreck from start to finish. And commentators are scratching their heads. Why is he so unpopular? It's an invasion. And on top of all of this, you've got a fake president who's in there in obvious and sharp cognitive decline, and the media trying to cover it up. All the word stumbles, the trouble staying awake, the mix-ups in his speeches, calling Kamala Harris the president. That's happened multiple times this year. And then you've got the division between the fake presidency and the fake vice presidency. These two camps can't stand each other. And on top of that, Kamala, if it's possible, she's even less popular than Joe Biden. And I suppose there's probably commentators that would say, I can't understand why Kamala is so unpopular. Well, open your eyes and you'll see why. This is the White House. It's interesting. This was from a couple months ago. Ronnie Jackson, he's now a congressman. I forget which state he's from, but he used to be the White House doctor. And he had some interesting comments on a radio show back at the early part of November. And listen to what he had to say. He's the one that actually encouraged Donald Trump to take this cognitive test. Because remember how they would not stop about how that Donald Trump was in cognitive decline. He was crazy. We were going to have to use the 25th Amendment to get him out. And all of those commentators have suddenly gone silent. Even as there's someone who is in obvious cognitive decline. Listen to Ronnie Jackson from a few weeks back, clip 11.
I just tweeted out, I retweeted the whatever they had said, whatever Biden had done, and I just put, all I tweeted was wow, W-O-W, wow, with an exclamation mark. Wow, does anybody remember the cognitive test that I gave at Real Donald Trump? Looks like somebody else needs a test. That's all I said, period. Mm-hmm. I drove down the road about another 20 minutes, ding, I got an email from President Obama, a scathing email. He just tore me up, an entire page about how disappointed he was in me and how it was beneath me as a physician and beneath me as a officer in the military to be attacking Joe Biden like this, and it was a betrayal of the trust that he and his administration had put in me, and he was so disappointed in me, and yada yada, and he hoped that I would do a better job in the future, and it was unbelievable. It just really hit a nerve with a lot of people, and that's kind of, you know, I got the Trump stamp on me the day I stood up there and did that physical. I didn't realize it at the time, but that's the day I got the Trump stamp on me. That was the day that the press decided that if they could ever cut my heart out, they would do it. And that's what happened. I got Kavanaugh before Kavanaugh did, is what I say, you know, with my VA nomination. I never seen anything like that happen to anybody before, and most people hadn't. It's happened multiple times since then, but it was a crazy experience. But that was because I got the Trump stamp on me that day. And ever since then, you know, it's just gotten worse and worse. But I don't care.
Just telling the truth.
I'm proud. And you know what? People all the time, well, you know, you get persecuted a lot because of your relationship with Trump or whatever. And I said, yeah, I got the Trump stamp on me and I'm proud of it. I don't care.
Probably that last bit we could have trimmed. But if you heard in the middle there, he talks about Obama when Jackson dared suggest that, well, hey, if you're going to hold Biden to the same standard as Trump, how about giving Biden a cognitive test? Nobody's saying that today. In fact, when he said it or suggested it with one tweet, he gets a scathing email from Barack Hussein Obama. How dare you? How dare you question Joe Biden's cognitive ability? Who's calling the shots here? You know who's calling. You know who the puppet master is. It's certainly not Joe Biden. Biden gets up there and apologizes every time he takes one question. He says, I'm going to get in trouble. He's the president of the free world. The Afghanistan withdrawal, I should say, a complete and total and unmitigated disaster from start to finish. And you've got a CNN commentator wondering why Biden's so unpopular? To cut and run? To leave the Taliban with $90 billion in military hardware? To leave hundreds and hundreds of Americans stranded? This exchange was with Peter Doocy and the chief propagandist at the White House, Jen Psaki, about the hundreds and hundreds of Americans still stranded in Afghanistan. Listen to clip 14.
Why is it that there are still Americans stranded in Afghanistan?
Well, I think, let me just reiterate something that Tony Blinken said back in August, which is that if Americans who are in Afghanistan wanted to leave, whether it was 3 weeks from now, a month from now, 2 months from now, back in August, we would help them get out. And that is something that we've delivered on our word on. I would note that since that time, we've directly assisted 479 American citizens, 450 lawful permanent residents, and SAV holders and SAV applicants to depart Afghanistan. That's important to convey because it's important for people to understand who are there, that even if they decided not to, even if they decided not to today, we are still going to help them depart, and there's evidence of that.
Okay, 479 left behind is a lot higher than the 100 to 200 that President Biden was talking about at the end of August.
479 who we've helped depart,
right,
since August.
He said that he thought that we believe there are 100 to 200 with some intention to leave. So how did you guys get the number?
There were people who determined they wanted to leave since then, and it is our responsibility to help them depart. And so that's evidence of our commitment to do exactly that.
Since the evacuation of all the troops, she's bragging about almost 500 that they've gotten out of there. And Doocy says, well, but I think Biden said that it was just 100 to 200. Almost 500, and there's more. There's still more there, stranded, trapped. It's a story that the Biden administration would love to see go away. And so they changed the subject. The domestic terrorists in our midst, those who supported the insurrection of January 6th, it's all they have. Just like Red State says, it's all they have. Go after Trump supporters. Talk about the insurrection of 2024. Joe Manchin. Speaking of nukes, he nuked the Build Back Worse legislation that the radical communists in Congress were desperate to force their way through. Manchin's on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and he's beyond the point of saying, well, yeah, he's had lunch with Biden and all these people that are trying to push this Green New Deal through. And he just gets up on Fox yesterday and flat out says, no, I'm not going to vote for it. Clip two.
I've always said this, Brett. If I can't go home and explain it to the people of West Virginia, I can't vote for it. And I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no.
This is a no, and it's coming from a Democrat, and they need his vote to pass this through. There was a Charlemagne whatever, I forget his full name, but he's going back and forth with Kamala over the weekend, saying, well, who's the president here, Biden or Manchin? Because Manchin's got so much control. Because Manchin's basically, he's the stonewall for this so-called Build Back Better bill. And Kamala's handlers wanted to rush her out of there. They didn't even want her to stay for the rest of the interview. And then when she did stay and gave an answer, she's basically, oh, come on. Of course Joe Biden is. People know Biden's not running the show. Even liberals, even leftists, they know. I mean, you've got control of the White House. You've got control of Congress. Coming back to this Build Back Better, this is from Conservative Treehouse. It says, the apoplectic response to Joe Manchin's rebuke of Biden's Build Back Better deal in general, and specifically their reaction to losing the climate change agenda within it, points toward the original intent of COVID-19 in the first place. It's got all these climate change proposals in this legislation. That's really what it's about. In this Conservative Treehouse piece, it quotes a tweet from someone at Politico. A lot to process on the Manchin news, but from a substantive standpoint, it's just objectively devastating for the planet. Well, I thought it was about infrastructure. No, this is about the Paris Climate Accords. This is about AOC's Green New Deal. And it's all going up in flames. Because of Manchin and then the Republicans. Conservative Treehouse says the Build Back Better agenda was never about anything except radical climate change legislation. Once you accept that, now admitted, baseline, things start to become much clearer. In order to destroy the something of that scale, the energy program for the entire world, something massive is needed to fundamentally change, note that, that's what Obama liked to use, the entire world approach toward energy production. Something is needed to create the crisis that provides the origin for the process to initiate. It says that triggering mechanism was COVID-19 and all the variants therein. This is why it won't go away. They need it. They need it to fundamentally transform not just the United States, but the whole world. It's all part of the attack. Says here, there you have it. That's the summary soup to nuts explanation of why a virus was created and the subsequent panic pushing to create social structures that would facilitate the global acceptance of an entire new economic system that would be designed around saving the planet. Well, it's more than just that. They used the COVID as well to steal an election. It's all part of the attack. America under attack. Just like our booklet says, America under attack. You go back to that appeals court decision on Friday night. You know, it was laughable to see this another political writer. I didn't get his name, but after the Sixth Circuit reversed the decision at the lower level and basically said, yeah, the Biden administration can go forward and OSHA can apply these vaccine mandates. At Politico, they tweeted, "Big win for Obama." Big win for Obama. How's that for saying the silent part out loud? Big win for Obama administration at Sixth Circuit. A panel votes 2-1 to allow OSHA vaccine mandate to provide employers over 100 people to take effect. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's why they slip up and say Obama. Obama hasn't been in office for 5 years. He's the puppet master. Going back to that interview, Ronnie Jackson with that radio host at the early part of November. Listen here to what he has to say. This is straight out of America Under Attack. That Michael Hastings interview where he talked about people swooning before Barack Obama. This is Ronnie Jackson, the former White House doctor, in an interview in early November, clip 10.
This is one of the first things I noticed. Whenever I went from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, the press, right, the press corps at the White House and all the other press, Obama was the Messiah, man. I mean, he could walk on water. He would walk past the press corps, and they would forget they were even press. They were falling all over themselves. They were just salivating. I mean, they were just like, they were just starstruck, like nobody's business. I mean, and they could not get enough of him, right? And then at the end of the Obama administration, beginning of the Trump administration, exact same scenario. When President Trump would walk out there, you could just see the hostility, and they just wanted to spit on him.
You could see it.
You could see it in their eyes. They were so, you know, just it was just so hostile towards him, right? And it was just, there couldn't have been two more different impressions that the press would give you when these presidents would walk out in front of them, and they worshipped, literally worshipped Obama, and they hated Trump. It was unbelievable.
Worship Obama. That's all part of the will worship, Colossians 2. And they despise, they hate Donald Trump. Well, a lot of people don't. If you notice in the church over the weekend, President Trump speaking before a packed house, that arena down in South Texas from a few days ago, a packed house. I think some media made a big deal out of the fact that 200 tickets were left out of thousands and thousands that showed up. I don't know if Biden ever even got 200 people when he was campaigning for president. And yet there are the press doing everything that they can. Oh, Donald Trump only got 15,000 and 200 didn't show up? Or you've got Fareed Zakaria saying, I just can't understand why Joe Biden is so unpopular. Well, the truth is being exposed. This was an interesting opening monologue from Chris Salcedo over at Newsmax. Listen to clip 3.
An alarming number of our people are suffering under a mass psychosis. For political gain, statists have pushed our nation into a frenzy of irrational and unscientific fear, politicizing medicine and scientific norms. The goal? Control. And the abandonment of your freedoms, rights, and liberties. But there are glimmers of hope that a backlash against the left is brewing. The pendulum is swinging the other way.
The pendulum is beginning to swing the other way. I just want to draw your attention to a trumpet brief my father sent out 2 weeks ago. This is the one he did on Barack Obama and all of the treason that those people are responsible for. It says, despite the media silence and censorship, I believe we are at a turning point. I'm convinced that right as the radical elite's power is surging and they're leading America to its demise, their treason is about to be exposed and they will lose their power. As I have written before, Bible prophecy shows that Donald Trump is going to return to power. I believe the dramatic turn of events that will result in his reinstatement has already begun. There is a dramatic turn of events just ahead of us. You can know, you can see, if you're watching with open eyes, you can see why this current illegitimate administration is so deeply unpopular. Steve Bannon said on his show, I think it was earlier this morning, he said, we're seeing this regime, this illegitimate regime, collapse right before our eyes. As my father said in that piece, they're beginning to be exposed. Not beginning to be. They're being fully exposed. And the pendulum is swinging now in the other direction. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
We've pointed out before the striking similarities, the parallels between what happened to an entire Church of God, the Worldwide Church of God, following the death of Herbert Armstrong in 1986, and then what we're seeing happen in the nations of Israel today, specifically the United States of America. If you look at Raising the Ruins, it talks about the Worldwide Church of God was just right at its peak in the mid-1980s. Pulling in something like $160 to $70 million per year, hundreds of congregations around the world in 57 nations, hundreds of thousands of supporters, 120,000 people attending church services. They had another 210,000 that were co-workers or donors. Just a massive worldwide work. So many people still even remember the Plain Truth magazine. Peaked at 8.4 million in circulation back in the mid-80s. The World Tomorrow program on 382 TV stations all over the world. And this is back before the rise of cable television, digital television, and all of that. When you were on TV in the mid-1980s, you were on one of three or four channels. So no wonder so many people were well aware of Herbert Armstrong and his work. It was God's work through him. Notice John chapter 4. Jesus here has something to say about God's work. It says here in verse 31, "In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, 'Master, eat.'" This is the same chapter where Jesus encounters this woman at the well of Jacob, Jacob's well. And Christ's disciples had gone away for a bit, and they came back, and they thought he needed some physical sustenance. It says in verse 32, "I have meat to eat that you know not of." So the disciples didn't yet have God's Holy Spirit, and so this was a statement that confused them. They were thinking in terms of the physical, you know, physical food. And here's Christ talking about meat that they know nothing of. Verse 34, "Jesus said to them, 'My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work.'" So this was Jesus Christ's mission. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, his meat, his food, spiritually speaking, was to do God's work. It was to fulfill God's will. This is where he obtained his real sustenance and strength, spiritually speaking. This was most important. This was the most important object or objective in Christ's life. This was his passion to finish the work. In John's gospel, the love of God, my father says, "This is the key to having passion and high spirits. The work of God has a built-in vision of joy. It always keeps us looking beyond the difficulties of the present and seeing where this is all leading." If we're bogging down spiritually, this is one important way to turn it around. Just pour our hearts into the work of God. Fire up on God's work. This is the same book, John's Gospel. It says, "Jesus Christ wasn't even thinking about physical food. His mind was on why he, the Word, was made flesh. And then my father says this, if you get your heart into God's work and give it everything you have, it will give you all the exuberance and joy God has to give us on earth. This is the way God wants for you to be. This is the way he wants for all of us to be, those of us in God's church. He wants us to enthusiastically support God's end of the end time work. Verse 35, it says, say you not that there are yet 4 months and then the harvest comes. It says, behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest. Don't say that, well, we can always pour our hearts into it later. We can always get around to doing the work later. God says, look, open your eyes, see what's happening. I was saying that in the first segment. I mean, with respect to these all these dreadful events and what's actually happening to our nations, you have to be a fool to say that, well, I just can't understand why this is the case. I mean, everything in my mind, everything's perfect. That's the way so many of those commentators think. They just can't. They're so blinded by agenda. They can't see the truth. And with respect to God's work, there's quite a few Laodicean Christians who cannot see miracles, open doors. God says of his Philadelphians in Revelation 3 that they have little strength, physically speaking. They're not a massive organization. And of course, the church today, it's nowhere near even what it was when Herbert Armstrong was here. And yet God empowers his work. God performs miracles for his work. God miraculously opens doors for his work. And we just have to have the faith to walk on through. We can't limit ourselves, because if we limit ourselves, we limit God's work. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. If we look to God in faith, like Zechariah 4 says, well, he'll just move the mountain out of the way, and we're good to go. Mr. Armstrong, this is his last coworker letter, January 10th, 1986. He says, the greatest work lies yet ahead. And then he quotes from John 10, verse 35, or John 4, I think what we just read there. It says, never before in the history of the church has it been possible to reap so great a harvest. It has only been made possible through modern technology, beginning with the printing press, radio, television, and rapid mass transit and mass communication. See, never before have we been able to really reach out to people all over the world, even with just a scattered few, support actively and zealously supporting this work. So that messages like what you get on this program and my father's program, The Key of David, can go right around the world. Just like Christ said to the disciples in Acts 1, you're going to go to every section on earth, basically. By the power of God's Spirit, God makes his Spirit available to those who repent and turn to God in faith, who are baptized and receive that Spirit through the laying on of hands. But then, too, he's made available to his work all of these tools and instruments that are needed to get the message out. And then, of course, it's God who has to call people to the truth. And then people have to respond as well. Some of it's on them. They have to go after it. And I'm getting more and more emails, by the way, of people that are close. They're close, but because of the cares of this world, or maybe trials and tests, or maybe just feeling like they're too deep into the ways and the customs of this world, they can't quite get over the hump. They can't quite pull themselves out of the pit. And of course, they can't do it of and by themselves, but through Christ, they can. We've got to be willing to act on this truth, though. We've got to be willing to go forward with Christ. We've got to be willing to follow Christ in faith. And if you're willing to do that, he will lift you up out of the most dire situation. He will rescue you. He will release you from captivity. Spiritual captivity. This world is in bondage. As I think most viewing this program know that to be the case. I mean, just look at this world. We ought to want to be released from its captivity, or the captivity that the devil has it in. A world held captive. Mr. Armstrong had a booklet that went by that very title back in the 1980s. This is Daniel 11 now. Let's switch over to the Old Testament. Daniel 11:31, it says, "An arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate." So in the history of God's church in these last days, this is the way Satan went about deceiving most of God's people. He came in desecrating the place where God dwells. That headquarters work, it was situated in Pasadena, California, back in the day. And then added to that, Satan destroys the work. He desecrates the holy place and he destroys the work that's going out to the world. And I mean, that was shut down within just a few years of Herbert Armstrong's death. The programs, the publications, the literature, the magazines. The message was watered down. People lost interest in the message. And it just became yet another church. One of many Christian denominations in this world. One of Satan's churches. They had the truth. They had the work. That's what set them apart. Verse 32, it says, "And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries, but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits." See, those that know God, they're going to be strong, even if they're a little flock, even if they don't have a lot of human strength. If they know God, there's strength there, because there's strength in God. You should look at Ephesians 6. I forget the exact verse. Ephesians 6, verses 10 to 14, somewhere in there, where it talks about the spiritual war that we're engaged in. Warring against principalities in high places. I mean, Satan's got his government with top officials, top demons. And they're in control. They're confined to this earth. But you can read back in Ephesians 1, I think it's verse 21, where it says that Jesus Christ is even more powerful than all of that. So we've got to draw on his strength, his power, so that we can overcome the devil, so that we can resist against the devil. And then, like it says in the book of James, he'll flee from us. We can't do it on our own strength. We're nothing. Even Jesus himself, when he walked this earth, when he was God in the flesh, he said in John 5 and verse 30, "I can of my own self do nothing." He was totally dependent on God's strength and power. And that's what we need. If we're really going to be able to contribute to God's work as powerfully as we'd like to, as powerfully as God wants us to. Verse 33 here it says, "And they that understand among the people shall instruct many. Yet they, the many, shall fall by the sword, and by flame, by captivity, and so on." See, this small little group, this scattered group, they're going to be able to do a great work for God, even as people are falling by the wayside all over the place. In Daniel Unlocks Revelation, it says, "If you look at what God has done through his people year by year in this small work, you would have to say, these are some pretty impressive exploits. But we will do many more heroic acts if we use God's universe-size strength. The greatest work is still ahead." Yes, indeed, the greatest work is still ahead of us. The greatest work is still ahead of God's church and family. God needs you. He needs all of us to be wholehearted in our support for his end-time work. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to email the show if you like, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.